Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening. We are live, aren't we, boys?
Yes, we are. We
certainly are.
Some of us are back from vacation. Some of us are going on vacation. Some of us need a vacation. You guys pick and choose where you are, what category you're in.
I just got back, and I need another one.
There you go. Angelo, you're a going on vacation.
I'm a going on a Friday. Road tripping down south.
Look at that. So we're sneaking in this live episode of what is this called now? One show, one drink tonight? Because we have one show, and we actually have one drink, but three kinds of it.
So let's call it one brand, three drinks.
Oh, that's good. We're rebranding our sub-brand.
But hey, let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Roll the intro.
Welcome to One Show, One Drink, part of the What We Watch When We Drink podcast from the Booze Dancing Entertainment Network, where we take one show or film and pair it with one boozy beverage. If you enjoy this show, please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Audible, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. You can also find us on boozedancing.com, and if you have any questions, comments, show, or drink suggestions, email us at boozedancing@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
You know, I don't watch this podcast very often, ever. I'm always amazed by how wonderful that beginning is. You know, I'm not really a subscriber, so...
Semi-professional. That's the key.
Semi-professional. Welcome to all those out in online land to What We Watch When We Drink on the Booze Dancing Entertainment Network. This is the sub-brand of us at our podcasting. It's One Show, One Drink, your unofficial podcast of record of freedom and the Ukrainian army, who are kicking a lot of Russian butt, and the men and women of Ukraine. Keep up the good fight. We are going to turn this thing into a podcast. This live stream is going to turn into a podcast, so you can download it at a future date. What are we doing tonight, boys?
So the show is The Great, The Hunt for Red October. And the drink, which really there will be three, one bottler, three drinks, Lemon Heart and Son Rum Purveyors.
So we got a classic movie. We all love it. We all quote it. It's an amazing movie.
Never seen it. New movie? Who's this Connery guy? Never heard of him.
I like the sequel better. Hunt for Red October 2.
Electric Boogaloo.
And we have all these wonderful Lemon Heart rums, courtesy of our friends at Impex, Sam Filmus and Chris Udy. Thank you guys for the samples. We're gonna taste through these rums, give you our thoughts, and talk a little bit about this classic movie. And we're doing something we've not done before, too. At least two of us are going to be watching the movie off to the side of our screens as we are talking about it. We can't have the sound up. We can't show you because of legal issues. And we're cheap. We didn't want to pay for the copyright, you know, the rights to broadcast.
We don't have a legal budget.
We don't have a legal budget. No.
We just don't.
Zero. We barely have a budget for the newspaper.
The what?
The newspaper.
The newspaper.
Yeah, right, exactly.
What the hell is that?
Online, I meant.
You know what it's good for? Drying your shoes when they get wet. Stuff them inside the shoes. Get all the moisture out. Very good.
And for fish, when you're rolling them up to give to your, you know, sleeping with the fishes thing. Let's start with this first rum.
Yeah, let's do that. So there's three, right? We've got the original, we've got the Blackpool, and we have the 151. So I really think we should start light and start with the original 1804.
So you're saying start light. What is the ABV of this? Do you know?
40% ABV.
It is considered a classic British style rum.
And it is from Lemon Heart and Son, original 1804. I'll read a little bit from the Impex site. Lemon Heart and Son, original 1804, is the classic British style black rum, cherished by rum drinkers around the world for its bold, rich flavor, full body complexity, and exceptionally smooth finish. Original 1804 is the perfect example of a rum that shows pronounced flavor when mixed with cola, a premium blend of single estate rums, distilled, bourbon barrel aged, and blended on the east bank of the Demerara River in the lush tropical Caribbean country of Guyana. Now, when we talk to our rum friends, Dawn and Mitch, there's just one distillery on Guyana?
Yeah, it's the Demerara Sugar Guys. I think they basically had a monopoly on the sugar, so there's only one distillery. I don't know if it's affiliated with them or not, but there's only one distillery. Okay.
All right, let me do a little pour here, and then we'll do a little cheers.
A little clinky clink.
Gentlemen, cheers.
Cheers. All right, here we go. We are drinking live on Booze Dancing TV rum from Lemon Heart.
It smells a little funky.
I'm getting a little citrus on the nose.
That's super funky, a little funky. A little banana and a boot.
Oh, it smells good, though. I like it. I like it. It's got, like, rich, dark, deep sugars. Yeah. Maybe I'm not getting so much. Maybe it's like, more orange. Maybe, like, a little citrusy kind of note to it.
Candied oranges. Orange slices.
A little candied oranges and maybe a little pineapple. Like, a little, like, overripe pineapple. It smells good.
The dark fruit thing going on. Maybe some raisins or something.
Yeah, yeah. And it's really dark in color. I mean,
very dark.
And like it's really syrupy.
Do we know what the rules are? There are no rules kind of in the rum world, right? So if they want to add coloring, they can add coloring, right?
Yeah,
is that the deal?
I think so. That's my understanding.
I think there just need to be disclosure.
And they can add sugar and they can just do whatever the hell they want, right?
All right, I'm going for a taste. That is much hotter than the 40% would lead you to believe.
Yep, I agree with you.
Yeah, I kind of thought that on the nose. I was surprised it was only 40. But that is a real nice finish.
It is nice. By the way, this is pretty affordable. Because generally, we've been getting a lot of really, really expensive, like rums and whiskeys.
What's retail?
Total Wine has this for $24.
Well, hell.
So that's not bad.
This is great as a sipper and probably great for cocktails, right?
Yeah.
Well, I thought the simple rum and cola sounds like pretty good.
Cuba Libre.
Well, you know, I saw a video the other day. It's only a Cuba Libre if you add the lime. If you don't add the lime, it's just a rum and coke.
Which makes it like a cocktail, so Mike won't make it. But that's three ingredients.
Yeah, two ingredients is good. Sometimes I consider ice an ingredient.
I hear ya.
That's nice. It doesn't, is it oily? I don't know. Hang on. Like, how's the texture on this?
It's funny because it's so leggy. You think it's going to be oily, but it's...
It's not really.
But it's not thin either.
Yeah, it's not like a velvet robe.
You know what? The more you have it, like, the more flavors come out once you, like, chew it for a little while and get the saliva going.
There's a saltiness to it. Me.
Yeah.
A little brininess.
That is really nice. And for the price, that is really, really good.
I find these inexpensive rums sometimes so drinkable. You're not going to be overwhelmed by ABV. You're not going to be overwhelmed by funk. And boy, it's just easy drinking.
I don't find it overly sweet.
No.
It's not syrupy.
And like Aaron said, on the second pass, you pick up some salinity.
Mm-hmm.
Get a little of that saltiness.
So and it's a little dry too.
That's complex.
I think that's from the saltiness.
So I approve. I like it.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Well, $24.
Yeah, that's a bargain.
As I was saying to you guys, the name Lemonheart is known well with my wife and I. We traveled to the Caribbean back in the 90s, and it was a standard on bar shelves there. And we thought it was something very, very exotic. It should only get in the Caribbean. And then, of course, we found it like a Trader Joe's when we got here, came back. But it's great that Sam and Chris are bringing this stuff in now. So we like it, right?
Good stuff. Good stuff, good price. I like it.
Okay, here we are, and now we're going into our one show. And we are going to this 1990 classic, as we said, The Hunt for Red October. I don't even know where to start. As a trio, we love this movie.
I adore this movie, absolutely.
It is one of those movies that if you're channel surfing and you see it, you go to it and you get sucked into it.
And then I'll tweet at you. And just harass you that it's on. I think I'll just say what? It's on. One Pig Only.
I'll watch it, whether it's on network TV or some cable channel or channel, I don't know, some Fox affiliate or, you know, Netflix. It doesn't matter if it's commercials or cut up in 50 pieces. I'll watch it. It doesn't matter. Because one, it's so good. And two, we can fill the dialogue in your head of whatever's missing. You know. It's just great. I don't even know how to explain it. It's so good. So we want to give a little recap of what it's about.
Well, you know what? You want me to just read this?
What's this?
Sure.
All right. In IMDb. In November 1984, the Soviet Union's best submarine captain in a new undetectable sub violates orders and heads for the U.S., the American CIA military must quickly determine, is he trying to defect or to start a war?
There you go.
What is that?
That's the movie. Shh. I'm turning the volume down. So this falls into that era of...
It's like pre-end of Cold War, right?
Correct. And it's the 80s, 90s movies. There's a lot of them. They came from spy novels or they just came up from some writer's dream. And... We were all kind of hooked in that. We were all a little bit nervous about living in the Cold War era. And it played on all that. And, of course, the Americans are the good guys in the end, like a lot of these movies were. I don't know. It just, at the time, it touched us. And you said you saw it with your dad in a theater?
Yep.
I don't remember where I saw it first.
This came out in March of 1990. I read the book, I think, the summer before. Yeah, and the book is fantastic.
Yeah. It is.
The book is really, really good. It's a good read.
This is not the first with this character, right? Of the book series?
I think it is the first one. Yeah. This is the first of the series. And they had Alec Baldwin play the title role, Jack Ryan, who was, I guess, the, you know, Tom Clancy hero.
Yep.
Yep.
In the books. And he was a CIA analyst.
Yeah.
And he kind of gets sucked into all this. He's like the reluctant hero.
Correct. He has a background in studying Russian naval stuff. He learns of something in the movie, in the story, that the Russians might have a super duper sub that is undetectable.
Right.
A stealth sub, as it were. And it may be somewhere out in the water. And he thinks, he feels, he knows that maybe the captain of the ship, played by Sean Connery,
Marco Ramius,
may want to defect. And maybe there's not a crisis. Maybe it's a guy that just wants to defect with this piece of hardware. Yep. And so he has to convince his superiors that this is not war. This is going to be a defection sort of story.
Good stuff. Good stuff. But it's fun. It's a lot of fun. It's a incredible cast.
We'll get to the cast. I think some of the actual movie making is pretty spectacular. There are, if you look back at now in today's technology, okay, that could have been done better, or that could have been done better. The CGI wasn't very good there, but I thought the submarine stuff is very good. You kind of feel like you're in there. I remember seeing it on a big screen too.
Yep.
And you know, you're there, you're right in there. You're amongst those nuclear warheads. You're right in there, and it feels like it.
And I was telling Ange last night we were talking about it, and I said that much like The Martian was crowdsourced for the science to make sure it all works, that Clancy doesn't know all this stuff. So he would talk to the people who would give him as much information as they were legally allowed to under, you know, classified stuff.
Yeah.
And then he'd go to the hobby shops and find the models and talk to the model builders and say to the model builders, like, if you were making a submarine that did this, where would that be? How would it work? What would be, because these guys spend so much time making these true to life exact replicas when you throw stuff at them, they're like, well, it would have to be here. This is how it would have to work. This is what it would look like or sound like. Because the sub that Marco Ramius, Connery's character, is stealing is their new state of the art with this special caterpillar drive that's whisper quiet. They'll never hear it coming.
It's called the magneto hydropropulsion or something.
something insane. With their caterpillar drive. So they figure out, how does this work? And both the Russian sub and the US subs that are pursuing it, the after he wrote the book, he was visited by members of the government to ask where he got the information from.
Huh, interesting.
Because they thought that perhaps he had bribed someone or had stolen some classified information.
together. Espionage.
There's probably, hey, that's, you're not supposed to know this. How does that work?
Does anyone know the backstory on this, getting this thing made? Was because this was probably first Clancy's first book turned into a movie, I assume.
As far as I know, this is the first one. It's also his first book. So yeah, I'm not sure. I don't really know all the backstory. I mean, I guess I'm sure I can get it.
And the book's from 1984, so it only took 6 years to somehow put out the book, get it on the bestseller list, get it optioned to get the movie made. So I can't imagine there was much of an issue to make the book into a movie. It seems like it worked pretty quick.
It was optioned in 85.
The guy who directed it was John McTiernan. I think he also did Die Hard and a few others. I'm not sure what else he did, but I know he's like an action guy. It's kind of interesting because he was the director. The cinematographer was Jan de Bont. Jan de Bont wound up directing Speed. So all these guys have kind of cut their teeth on doing action films. Has either of you read the book?
Yeah, I read the book too.
Yeah, the book is fun. I actually reread it a couple years ago just to see if it was, you know, how it holds up. And it's just a fun read. It's just really, really well done.
The only thing with the book is he has to be very descriptive.
Right.
And some people might find, you know, 3 pages of descriptions to set the scene too much. Where with the movie, someone already did that. The scene's already set.
Yeah, it's right there. Yeah.
So I know some people think that Clancy's books are a little bit of a slog because he's very, very descriptive. I really enjoy the books. But some people say that they're, you know, you didn't need to be that long.
Yeah, but you know what, though? I think there's substance behind it. as opposed to, you know, one of my least favorite writers, which is Stephen King, who just doesn't know when to cut it short.
Well, he gets paid by the page. So yeah,
he gets paid by the word.
If his book isn't 1,000 pages, he's not making enough money. So,
yeah, I mean, I probably read about 5 or 6 Clancy books. And for me, it was all relevant. It wasn't just, you know, for the sake of, you know, it all kind of ties in. So like with this book, the detail on everything between from the aircraft carriers to the destroyers to the submarines, it's all
descriptions of the people.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
most of them are grizzled veterans that he's friendly with. Uh-huh. And he's got to go through big, long descriptions of these people and what they look like and how they act. And, you know, you're part of the action by the time you're done reading the book. It's really good.
The Jack Ryan character, I think at that time, he's an everyman to some extent. He's a little, he's nerdy. He's not the big, he's not Rambo. We're leaving that category of kind of hero in movies. And you've got this smart guy and he's going to save the world, but he's going to save the world with his smarts, not with, a headband and a machine gun.
Yeah, and he's the reluctant hero. He's the desk jockey who analyzes everything that somehow gets thrown into the field, whether he wants to or not.
Yeah, and I think it's a great writing technique of taking this everyman and throwing him into the woods to save mankind. It's really well done. I was just looking at something about the filming. They did it at Paramount here in L.A., and so they built these sets for the interiors of ships. And Sean Connery had said it was very claustrophobic. There were 62 people in a very confined space, 45 feet above the stage floor. It got very hot on the sets, and I'm also prone to seasickness. The set would tilt 45 degrees, and it was very disturbing. He shot his scenes in 4 weeks, and the rest of the production took additional months in Los Angeles. Oh, also in Port Angeles, Washington also. So interesting that, you know, being on a submarine, if you've ever been on one, it is very, very claustrophobic. I remember being on a couple tours when I was a kid, and even being little on a ship, it felt, there's no window. How do I get out of here quickly?
Hey, Mike, is the Olympia still over at Penn's Landing?
Yeah.
I was only on that one. And that's like, was that a World War One sub or a World War Two sub?
That might have been a World War II sub.
But that thing is tiny.
It's a tin can. I mean, it's
what it is. Yeah, when you talk about claustrophobic, my God.
And you sense that in the movie. You sense that there's a very small space. And when tensions get high throughout the movie, oh, my God, you feel it. You feel it's like you're in that office at work when 4 people are in there and things are going bad and all of us and you can't get out because somebody's in front of the door. It's just like that in so much of the movie. You just feel like everyone's on top of each other and how the work gets done and how the emotions are kept in check. It's pretty amazing. And we see all that play out so often in the movie. It's amazing.
And it's not the Olympia. The Olympia is Dewey's Spanish-American War flagship. The submarine is the Bacuna.
Oh, okay. I know it was one of those. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, but it's amazing. They have these two long-serving ships, and you look at them, and boy, both these boats are really small.
Yes, they are. Very, very small. I like when you walk through, like, the sleeping quarters, and it's, like, 3 bunks on top of each other, and there's, about 1 foot between one bunk and the other? So basically, you just lie flat and fall asleep.
And, that's where they had if you're over 5'8", you can't serve in a sub kind of things and all these other rules because you're not going to fit.
No.
We could go back to the plot a little bit. Jack Ryan has this information. He takes the CIA to Darth Vader and James Earl Jones.
Admiral Greer.
And gives him the info and okay, let's take it to the next level of person on the chart. And at the same time, something's going on out in the ocean. The Dallas, is that the name of the
USS Dallas?
The USS Dallas.
Under Captain Bart Mancuso.
Bart Mancuso, played by Scott Glenn, is out there and they're just doing their normal kind of patrolling and training. And there's something out there that they're not really sure what it is. An anomaly of some sort.
Well, and the sonar operator picks it up, right?
Yes.
Yep.
Jonesy, right?
Jonesy.
Except this.
Courtney B. Vance.
And this is all kind of happening at the same time. There's some weirdness going out in the ocean. that the USS Dallas picks up. Jack Ryan's back in D.C. or talking about this, these pictures that he has of this weird submarine thing. Nobody really knows what it is, right?
What are these doors?
Yeah.
What do these do? And he starts to make a connection that there's something going on between what's going on in the ocean that the U.S. sub is seeing or hearing and these pictures. What is the connection? And ultimately, Admiral Greer sends Jack Ryan to talk to the head of the NSA, who basically says, that's a great theory. Go figure it out. And he makes him go out on a chopper to get out to that ship. And of course, things are kind of getting hairy out on this ship out in the middle of the Atlantic. And all of a sudden, this guy in a suit with little or no military experience is thrust upon a ship to show the boys out there this crazy theory that there's something weird going on with a Russian ship and Sean Connery trying to defect. And nobody's buying this crap, and they got bigger, more important things to do out there. And that's really the beginning of this, the crazy story of all the tension that leads for the next hour of the movie. It's just so riveting. And of course, then when we get to the real bulk of the drama, it is just, the dialogue is just amazing. The set, the scenes are amazing. Even the on screen data points, you know, is really good. You know, even for 1999, watching it now, it's pretty good.
What's cool about the movie too is that there's just so many pieces going on, you know, like Marco sent the letter to, who was it? Was it like his father-in-law or somebody in the Kremlin telling him what he's going to do, basically telling him what's going on. Yeah. So the Russians are mobilizing the troops, and I guess they're picking up on all this radar activity of all these ships moving in, and you've got, what did they say? The Russians were dropping sonar buoys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So trying to find this ship. Got basically the whole Russian fleet. You've got all the subs, all this stuff trying to find this guy.
The Russians know that he's trying to defect, in essence. So they're sending out their fleet to get him. The Americans don't know yet, except Jack Ryan kind of believes that that's what's going on. And then without trying to create World War III, how does the U.S. sort of capture, maybe not the right word, help Ramius?
Right.
Do what he's trying to do, which is basically defect with this brand new first class high tech Russian ship and all of its Russian sub.
Right. And all this stuff has to be done kind of like, you know, on the keep it all on the DL. And it's what, a combination of chess and poker at the same time.
Totally.
Because nobody knows what's going on because they can't communicate directly. It's not like Ramius can pick up a phone and say, hey, what's going on? So,
yes.
And of course, the whole ship isn't in on the defection. It's just him and his main guys.
Right. And we don't know that until later. And there's the connection between Ramius and Jack Ryan, that Jack Ryan's been studying him for a long time.
Right.
They actually met at one point. And Jack Ryan knows him so well. He knows about the death of his wife and correct?
Right.
Yes.
He really knows him. He's an analyst, so he has to learn this kind of stuff about someone he's following. So there's a connection between the two. And how are they going to work together to make this all happen? It's just such a well-done piece of cinema. What's it on Rotten Tomatoes? I'm kind of curious. Is it
88% Rotten Tomatoes?
There you go.
What I found really, really interesting was the very beginning of the movie. The Russians speak Russian.
That was a cool transition.
And then they just switch over.
Uh-huh.
And they don't try to speak with like American accents or anything. They just speak the way they all normally speak. So all these people are from all over the world. Connery still has a Scottish accent. One guy sounds Australian. They just do all the stuff they normally do without having fake accents because they just were like, well, what's the point?
So I got to say, when I remember this point so well, seeing it, I hated that.
Really?
I hated I hated it. I'm fine with it now. I hated the fact that all of a sudden these guys started talking English. And why can't they just keep talking Russian? It would be more normal.
Authentic.
Yeah. And why did they just start? Why weren't they speaking English from the beginning? We know they're Russian. It really bothered me. And I really hated that. And now I've seen it so many times, I think I'm just past it all. But it would have been nice to see Sean Connery speak Russian for the entire movie.
Oh, they could have just gotten a whole Russian cast. I mean, why not?
And I read an interview with Connery where he said, we could have done that. And the movie would have had subtitles and people would have hated it.
That's the other part of it, right? Yeah. Right.
Because, like, yeah, and then someone will complain about our Russian accents or our inflection or the translation. Mm-hmm. Like, so what, you can't win by doing it. You can't win by not doing it.
If this movie's made today, how would they do that? You think it would all be in Russian, or do you think it would?
Yeah, I think so much has subtitles now. We were talking about this last night that I think you're right, Andrew. I think they probably would do it all in Russian with an all Russian cast.
I mean, look at just all the streaming services. They all have international shows. Not saying they're like blockbusters, but occasionally one hits, like Squid Game, for instance. You know, so maybe there's a little bit more of an appetite for it. I mean, you see how much you watch foreign shows. You don't watch them dubbed. You watch them subtitled, right?
I do. Yeah. I think it would have worked, maybe not then, but definitely today, if you did it all in two languages. And, you know, you could have, if it was today, this story, maybe you got three or four languages because you got other Russians that are speaking different languages, you know, depending on where they're from in Russia. It would have been really interesting, I think, having it. But that was really annoying to me back then. It's hard not to love this movie. There's lots of humor in it, right?
Oh yeah.
And there's lots of digs. There's lots of comedy in it.
When Jack Ryan meets Ramius on the ship, and he says we were at a conference once.
Oh, I love this.
And he's bragging about how, you know, Jack Ryan writes a book on Admiral Halsey.
Yeah.
Because he's the foremost you know, admiral that the U.S. ever produced.
I know this book. And
I know.
This I know book. This book. Your conclusions were wrong.
Halsey acted stupidly.
He acted stupidly, and you're just like,
and he's saying, and he's doing this as the clock is ticking, right? Yeah. And they're in the drama at that very second, right?
Yeah. You know what though? I was watching it this week. Going back to Ramius, you know, in the beginning when he has the real orders, and after he kills the number two guy with the keys to the nuclear missiles.
Yep.
Remember when he burns the orders?
Yep.
Like, you don't put them in a trash can. You can't just like tear them up, whatever. And you just called in to have the doc come in. Isn't it going to smell something burning?
Yeah.
Like, what do you think? But then again, he's the captain of the ship, and they are Russian, so they may not question him.
Today it would have gone through a shredder.
Maybe it would. Maybe that's part of it too, though, because the culture may be, you know, Captain Ramius. He's large and in charge. There's no second guessing the commanding officer.
If he wants to set fire to things, go right ahead. Maybe that's what they do with their orders. They always set fire to them.
Sure, why not? You read them and you set fire them. This one is, what's that called? Plausible deniability?
Exactly.
And that's why the Russians are losing in Ukraine.
There you are. Speaking of Ukraine, wasn't Ramius Ukrainian?
Lithuanian.
Oh, Lithuanian. Right.
Which, again, is one of the reasons that Jack Ryan's so convinced that he's not going to be a renegade stealing a sub to attack the U.S. or anything, because he doesn't have that same level of political belief because he's not actually Russian.
Right, I gotcha. So on that note, shall we try the second one?
Let's try the second one.
I think we should go to our next rum, the Lemon Heart, Blackpool Spiced Rum, correct?
Yep.
Again, want to thank our friends at Impex, Sam Filmus and Chris Udy, for sending us the samples. Remind everyone, this is Booze Dancing TV Live. This is One Show, One Drink. We're going through some Lemon Heart rums from Guyana while we're watching The Hunt for October.
Is this the same as the original in terms of ABV and the production, just now it's spiced?
Good question. I don't know.
I don't know if you had any more information on them or not.
ABV is 43%.
So it's a little hotter.
Okay, so this is the Blackpool Spiced Rum, a new generation of premium rum, awarded the Chairman's Trophy at the Ultimate Spirits Challenge. Blackpool is a beautifully crafted, overproof, British-style single-estate distilled spiced rum. Mastery of art expertly balances Blackpool's naturally occurring bourbon barrel notes of exotic dried fruit, island spice, and vanilla bean with an all-natural spiced infusion, resulting in the definitive rum experience. Over ice, simply sublime. Mixed, adventurously awakening. Tribute to the provenance of the iconic Lemon Heart & Son brand, and honor to the passion of rum craft passed down through the generations at Lemon Heart & Sons since 1804. They've been at it for a while.
It is spicy.
Well, I haven't tasted it yet, but the nose is so vanilla-y.
Yeah, it's a lot of vanilla. There's a lot of vanilla on this nose.
I'm getting like a lot of back notes. I couldn't identify them. I'm not like Ange with this baking spice encyclopedia.
Oh, just stop it.
Just so you get all that vanilla, and then you get like almost like a potpourri behind it.
A little potpourri-ish.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. I get it. It's vanilla. I can't figure out what the back is, but it's nice though. It smells great.
Really nice. And leggy like the last one.
I'm getting Magnum displacement.
You know what? Actually, it almost has like a cola kind of scent to it on the background, like a cola extract maybe.
Yeah.
If you could distill that down, it's almost got that, like a little sweetness. Maybe some ginger.
A little of grandma's soap.
Grandma's soap, huh?
Grandma's soap?
Old lady soap. You get like a lavender soap.
No. Like a Yardley's?
Yeah.
I like the smell of Yardley's. I don't particularly like lavender in my drink.
Wow. It is spicy. And I can say I'm not a spiced rum fan. You know, that Captain Morgan's stuff mm-hmm. I never liked.
Ooh.
This is good.
It's got a kick.
What's the kick from? It's not the ABV.
No. But it was like a cinnamony kick on the back.
Yeah. You get like a big spice blast. Yeah.
Almost a little peppery.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what just happened, guys? Ramy has just killed one of his guys.
Oh, I'm a little past that. You mean the guy?
That guy. He killed him.
Oh, so this is where it starts burning the orders.
Yeah.
This is the scene.
He's dead.
He fell.
Speaking of orders, when the guy's walking through the Kremlin and he gets the letter from, Marco. You know, he sits down, he gets his tea. He's got his pretty little teacup with the silver on the bottom and the glass on top. And he's stirring it and he's reading it and he just knocks it over. Like, holy crap. Like, what the hell are you doing, pal?
Yeah, you're right. Here he is. He's just burning up those orders and just
leaving it on the desk.
There's fire on a ship is bad.
Right. Yeah, you would think.
It is blizzard on the table to burn up. I'm sorry.
Yeah. This rum is really nice. I like this. This is really good.
I do too. Well, I'm a big vanilla freak, so this is like right in my wheelhouse.
Was that what they called you on the basketball court? was that you? Power forward vanilla freak?
I'm the vanilla freak. Yo.
Yeah, you can't be like, what was Jason Siegel?
Vanilla fudge.
Vanilla fudge? There you go. You're not Jason Siegel height.
White chocolate.
He was Judge Fudge. Judge Fudge.
This is very nice. There is a lot of vanilla.
So let's take a break in the show, in the movie, and just talk about the cast for a minute.
It is an unbelievable cast.
It's a shame none of these people ever worked before or after this movie.
So I'm just looking at the list in Google. And there's probably, let's see. Maybe there's probably 40 pictures here. Only one woman, by the way. And I would venture to say I know a third of them, which is a lot, I think, for a movie with that many people. And there are probably people in here I don't know by the picture, but I'm sure I've seen them elsewhere, right? The top line in Google, Sean Connery, Alec Baldwin, Sam Neill, Larry Ferguson, the chief of the boat, James Earl Jones, Scott Glenn, Tim Curry, and Richard Jordan. That's the top line that shows up in Google. And we're not even the second line yet. That's 7 out of 8 people that are really well known. I'm not sure about Larry Ferguson. No offense, Mr. Ferguson. Those other names are just Hall of Fame actors.
Well, and then you get into the next tier for then. You got Courtney B. Vance and Stellan Skarsgård.
Let me just stop for a second. Larry Ferguson is the screenwriter.
Oh, is that right?
And he also wrote Highlander, Beverly Hills Cop 2, The Presidio, Alien 3. He's done a lot of stuff.
The second row on Google, at least the way mine's formatting, Stellan Skarsgård, Courtney B. Vance, Peter Firth, Fred Dalton Thompson, Jeffrey Jones, Joss Ackland, Michael Weldon, and Timothy Carhart. Okay, let's say you know probably 6 or 7 of those guys. That's pretty amazing on line 2. Now line 3, we're starting to get into the second, third, fourth tier. Gates McFadden, star of Star Trek, Next Generation.
Who does she play?
But she's Jack Ryan's wife.
Oh, okay.
Daniel Davis, Mark Draxton, Sven Ole Thorsen, Andrew Divoff, Anthony Peck, Thomas Arena, and Rick Ducommun. Rick Ducommun, longtime stand-up comedian. Now, after that, we're getting into some names I'm not familiar with, but there are faces that I definitely know.
You know Daniel Davis, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Who's Daniel Davis?
He's the captain who doesn't like Jack Ryan. Yeah.
I got you. Yeah,
he's been in a million things. I think he's in Star Trek, too.
He's in Star Trek, but he's better known for being in The Nanny.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, it was The Nanny. Yeah, yeah, that's right. Isn't he her father?
No, he's the I guess the butler, Niles.
Oh, the butler. That's it. The butler. Yeah.
And he does a great little segment on Star Trek The Next Generation where he plays Professor Moriarty.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. What are your thoughts? Any cast thoughts? I mean, that top row is just disgusting. Connery, Baldwin, Neil, Jones, Glenn, and Tim Curry.
I watched it the last 2 days, and the scenes that I really have been enjoying is everything on the Dallas. Just from like when you first meet Jonesy and he's telling the story about the, you know, Pavarotti and Paganini and all that stuff. Those guys are great. The whole look of Scott Glenn in the movie, him and his second in command, you know, those big glasses, like military spec eyeglasses.
It's also the 1980s, right? That's
right.
That was very normal then.
It felt much more real on the Dallas. You know, like that was like almost like they recruited like an entire ship. It felt very authentic. Whether it was or not, I don't know. But it just felt really good.
A fair amount of these gentlemen have military backgrounds,
right? You
know, prior to being actors. Uh-huh. So they know they can probably walk the walk a little bit,
right.
having worked in the military. Sean Connery and Sam Neill as those Russian characters are just amazing, I think.
Oh, yeah, they were great.
They feel, at least in the, I guess you could argue, maybe they're somewhat cliches for what we think of as Russian military folk. What we know of them, what we thought we knew of them, but they do that really well. You could argue that Scott Glenn is a caricature of the kind of the cowboy commander of a ship, but he's pretty great at it.
Yeah, but he's not like, you know, he's not like a John Wayne. He's like a professional officer of a ship.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
No nonsense, to the point. Like, I like Jonesy's making a joke and he just kind of like looks at him like, oh, I'm sorry, Captain.
Well, and I think you also see the playfulness on a ship like that. You have to be, I think, I'm not a military person, but I'm guessing it's close quarters. You have to show reverence to hierarchy.
Chain of command.
Chain of command. But you also, you're in close quarters. You have to have some sense of humor going on. You go crazy. You're underwater for months at a time. Aren't she at sea months at a time? So when Jonesy goes off and starts yapping about all these sounds that he hears and Pagani and opera, people are going to laugh at that. Paganini
and Pavarotti.
You're going to laugh at that stuff, and it's okay. Yeah. Even Bart Mancuso, his reactions to Jack Ryan coming on board, he's very serious about it. He can turn the dime to being very serious. Hey, this is real. This could be war here. We're doing something we've never done before. We're out of protocols. We're beyond protocols now. We're hooking up with this for a crazy ass idea, hooking up with this Russian sub. This is nuts. What are we doing? Yet the way Scott Glenn plays it, it feels like...
Well, he's not a robot. He's thinking.
There's strategy going on in his head. And that's true of all of these people. They're all playing chess in their head.
The Russians sent the fake, you know, news to the U.S. saying that the guy's going to defect and launch warheads on the United States.
Yeah.
And that's like the official line. They're playing chess the whole bit at the same time. Three-dimensional chess. It was like on, what's that, Big Bang Theory? What was it playing?
That's right.
Well, everyone else is playing checkers.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. You know, and if you think about the coordination of this stuff, I mean, you know, the North Sea is not a small place.
No.
That is hundreds and that's like thousands of miles.
And it's deep.
Yep. Very deep.
And cold.
Actually, they just had the scene where they're taking Ryan out to the destroyer or to the aircraft carrier.
That's Rick Ducommun.
Rick Ducommun.
Oh, it's so funny. It's just so funny.
Hilarious.
And you find out a little bit about Jack Ryan, that he was a Marine and broke his back in a helicopter crash. So he's terrified to fly.
I'd have a little PTSD myself.
So then you go through the whole thing where, oh, now let me put you on a helicopter and take you to a really small spot to land.
Dangerously. The name that I come back to a lot, it's a small part, is Fred Thompson.
Senator Fred Thompson.
Ran for president.
He's from what, Tennessee?
Was from Tennessee, yes. He's great.
Oh, he was really good.
He was on some TV show for quite a while, too, was it?
Law and Order.
Law and Order.
He played the Manhattan district attorney after the first guy retired.
He has that kind of cowboy-esque feel to him, but he's serious. I mean, hey, let's take a chance with this crazy idea from this Jack Ryan guy. all the actors that play the Russians, the two different subs, there is this great tension amongst them all. And you can see the fear in their eyes. It's really high drama on so many levels. What are you looking for, Ange? You looking for that?
No, I just got sucked into a little bit of a scene here. This is Ryan talking to Fred Thompson on the ship, you know, telling him, hey, listen, you're tired. Go take a shower, get some coffee, get some rest, go get a shave. He's giving him the whole story about the ring and how he crashed and all that stuff. But yeah, it's so easy to get sucked in. It's just so good. It's just so damn good. And going back to Courtney B. Vance, he's just so good as Jonesy. You know, like, he's got a sense of humor, but he's really serious. He really knows his stuff. You know, he's not just like sitting there like some robot listening to things. He's analyzing, trying to figure things out. You know, like, what was the whole thing? It's like, let me get this straight, Jonesy. $5 billion computer tells you it's a seismic anomaly, and you're telling me it's wrong.
Yeah, you know better.
Well, I mean, just the fact that he recorded the thing, and then he's like, all right, look, this is at a normal speed. Let's try this 5x speed. I mean, he's thinking, he's processing. Yeah. You know, he's analyzing.
He's the nerd of the ship.
Absolutely.
And Jack Ryan's the nerd of the CIA.
Yep.
And they're nerdy in their own ways, and they're coming about answers to problems differently than the everyday soldiers coming about, who are a little more black and white. These guys are looking at things a little bit differently. You know, they can be wrong too.
Well, and you know, it's probably the nature of the beast too with submarining, because you can't really see a lot. You're listening.
Sound is everything.
There's no windows. It's all about, you know, it's sound and navigation and sonar and all that. You're kind of just going by your instruments and just have to kind of learn to interpret it. You know, it's a little different than being on the deck of a ship where you could see something coming in or you can see something happening. I would imagine that, you know, your submarine guys in the Navy are way different from the guys that are on the aircraft carriers and the destroyers. You know, different personality, different mindset. You know, they kind of got to be. Like you said, tight quarters.
This business, hold on a second, it's coming. The jet crashes on the aircraft carrier. And Fred Thompson says, this business will get out of control. It'll get out of control. And we'll be lucky to live through it. The way he says it is so powerful. Mm-hmm. It heightens the drama even more. People are dying now. And there's also this other thing going on. And we don't even know what it really is about.
Right. And that crash had nothing to do with anything that's going on with other stuff.
Yeah.
This was just a routine surveillance, whatever they're doing.
But there's something else going on. Do you buy into this or not? Because as he said, things are getting tense in Washington. Things are getting tense on the ships. How do we not start losing people left and right?
And the thing is, they're not at war, right? This is all like peacetime missions.
Yes. This is all normal training stuff, as far as I know.
Right. So, but also going back to like the whole thing with the Paganini and Pavarotti, what's great is, you know, they're in the middle of the story and then he gets like the sonar warning and the conversation stops and it's back to business. You know, the transition from just like in the middle of a story to, all right, but wait a minute, what's going on here?
Yeah, hold the story.
We got to assess the situation here. I'm picking up something. I'll finish this later. You know, it's almost like, you know, like baseball, right? You know, there's a whole lot of nothing for baseball, but then something happens and you have to react. It's, you know, muscle memory, all that kind of stuff. You got to just jump right in when something happens. And that, I guess, that goes back to the training, right?
That's right. There's another scene going back to what you said, Ange, about this being on a ship and the sound, right? And you have that one, not on the ship, but that one character who hears gunshots. Is that gunshots? There's no cameras. There's no video. This is pre all that. This is the 1980s. So your ears are your best friend. Did anyone have any more to say about the cast?
I really like the Soviet ambassador.
Oh, he's great.
He is really good.
He's just so great.
In the beginning, as like a blustery guy who's accusing people of doing things. And then at the end, when he's got to be like, could you help us? And they're, you lost another sub?
Richard Gordon in that scene is so great.
As an S-30 advisor, yeah.
Picking the candies out of his, out of the little bowl.
Yep.
Is that his name Sergey? His name is, I think it's Sergey.
It's Andrei Lyshenko.
Andrei, you've lost enough.
You've lost enough.
is John Sacklin, what is he? Is he, he's not English. What is he like?
I thought he was something else, but I'm looking now. I think he is English. I thought he was South African.
You think he's South African because of Lethal Weapon 2, because he played a South African. Remember, he was the guy from the embassy. Diplomatic immunity. He was that guy. By the way, going back to the rums, the Blackpool total wine, $30.
Oh, we didn't talk about that. That's $30?
Yeah, $30 for a buck pole. That's pretty good.
That's amazing.
That's a bargain.
I like that. That's a buy. I may be going tomorrow.
Yeah, should we do the big boy?
Yeah, let's go to the big boy.
Rum with a 7.
Pour it off to let it breathe, and I think it's asphyxiating me.
So does that mean this is 75% alcohol?
That's usually what the 151 means.
My God.
Is that what you call overproof?
Well, that's funny you said that, because on the website, the Blackpool was overproof. It's only 43%.
So if that's overproof, what is this? Angry proof?
And you want to read a little bit about the 151?
The legendary gold standard in overproof rums. This is the Lemon Heart and Sons Overproof 151. Called for by name in many of Trader Vic's and Don the Beachcomber's classic tiki drinks recipes. Lemon Heart 151 is the legendary gold standard sought after and coveted by rum enthusiasts worldwide. Many rum aficionados believe that there simply is no substitute for Lemon Heart 151. Blended to exacting standards from an age-old recipe of select high-proof Demerara rums, Lemon Heart 151 remains the epitome of an exceptional rum. Rum always. I'll tell you, on the note, where'd Mikey go?
Where's Mikey go? He's there. He's gone. He's back.
I had some intruders.
Intruders? Were they hostile?
The children were at the Phillies game.
And I
thought for sure that I had several hours before the Phillies would somehow eke out a win. And I guess it was a quick one.
On the Heart and Sons website, on the 151, they quote, "There is no substitute for Lemon Heart 151 and nothing comes close. Jeff Beachbum Berry, one of the more famous tiki cocktail people."
So this was quite a coup for Impex then to get this.
It's a well-known, well-known brand in the rum world. I mean, this is way up there, and especially in the tiki cocktail world, it's very well known.
It's got a lot of heat, man. This is packed. This is a heater. But you get that nice smell, though. You get the vanilla.
Yeah.
You get those spices again. You get all that stuff on the back end, if you can get past the vapors.
The vapors don't bother me, but of course, on that first taste, it's in your face. But it's sweet. It's rounded out, balanced. Maybe we're just screwed up with all the drinking in our life, but it's a drinker to me. I could sip this.
The problem I have with the nose is that the other two just smelled approachable, and this doesn't really smell like much of anything.
It doesn't. There's not a lot going on in the smell.
On the nose, I'm getting like solvent and bullion cubes. It's basically what I got.
No, I get the vanilla. You just got to have to kind of approach like carefully.
I think once you taste it and go back to nose it again, you get that back. But without tasting it, I'm not getting much of anything.
But it's not the same vanilla or the level of vanilla as in the spiced one.
Wow.
Okay there, Mike? You all right? Don't fall over.
No, this you just do drops. You got to do drops. I think it's drinkable. You really got to take it easy on this one.
Wow.
That's good, though. That's really, really nice. And this, again, price-wise, not bad. The 151 here, again, I'm just going by total wine is like the number one thing on here. So that's what came up on my Google search. $34.
So it's 24, 30, 34. Is that what you came up with?
That's not bad. No, not at all. These days? No.
That is an assault. That's good.
Mm.
What do you do with an overproof rum? Sip it? You can't make cocktails with it, right?
Sure you could.
Sure you can.
You float it on top of like a Mai Tai or something?
Yeah. And I think over ice would be fine. You're going to let it's going to dissipate. It's going to dilute it a bit. And this is going to be very different with water, over time. I believe, it's in so many cocktails in tiki less. It's kind of crazy.
But not as like the base for the cocktail. More like the extra little spice you kick in.
Yeah, I think there's a couple that it's actually the base, but you'll use it with another rum, right? You'll have a 151 swizzle. Oh, this is adapted from Beachbum Berries, which is Jeff Berry, the guy that quoted on the website. 151, 1.5 ounces, and lime juice, simple sugar, Pernod, bitters, crushed ice. That's all.
Wow, that's 151. That's a lot. Yeah, 151. So you're bringing that cocktail down to like 60%? Soft. It's soft.
Yeah, so you're talking at 75%. Yeah, a little water. Boom, you're down to one. You're down to 60% before you know it.
You're down to an overproof rum. Wait, that's where we started.
That is very good, though. That is really, really cool.
This is a website, a cocktail website. It's about using this in cocktails. It says that the sugar and spice flavors are powerful. Use it in moderation or as the base to prevent it from overwhelming other components or allowing it to shine. The profile is darker than some overproof rums like Plantation, OFTD, Don't expect fruity caramel notes. Dark sugar and burnt caramel are going to be the leads, which I think is probably true.
Yeah, and I think if you take a small sip for the first sip, just to get acclimated to the
right.
to the pain, to the pain,
to the pain.
I think after that, it's almost approachable. I'm not going to say it's very approachable. It's mm-hmm. almost approachable. Mm-hmm.
And I got to say though, I mean, the prices on these things are very reasonable.
What's this one?
34.
Wow, that's crazy.
That's really good, and a little goes a long way. I mean, you're not going to go through a lot of this.
No.
Unless you're an absolute crazy man. Although, you know, if your better half gets her wish and gets that tiki bar going.
Oh, it'll be part of it, I'm sure. All right, so here we go.
The end of the movie.
I'm not going to tell you about the end of the movie. I'm going to give you some lines.
Before you do that, though, going back to the casting, Mike, I know we've talked about this many times, but Alec Baldwin. First of all, I think he's a great Jack Ryan. After reading the books, he's the right age. He's got the right attitude. You know, he's smart. The whole bit. He got greedy, right? Isn't that what happened? Like, he wanted too much money for the next.
They blame it on his ex-wife.
Which one?
Kim Basinger.
Kim Basinger? Okay.
Blame on Kim Basinger. And said that she basically was telling him how much of a star he was, that he then started to make all sorts of demands.
Yeah.
And they said, thank you and good day, sir.
Right. And then what do? They bring in like the box office king to take over his role.
Who was, again, very good in the role.
Yeah, my only complaint with him, I thought he was too old. I mean, you can't go wrong with Harrison Ford, but I thought he was too old for this.
And then they brought in Ben Affleck, and right. He was too young. Well, he's too young.
He was too Ben Affleck.
Well, whether you like Ben Affleck or not, the age wasn't right. He's not old enough to play the role.
All right. Solar radiation heats the Earth's crust. Warm air rises. Cool air descends. Turbulence. I don't like that.
Yeah, that was great. That was when he's first on the plane.
Yep.
It's just so good. And she's just looking at him like, take a nap, buddy. Just take a nap. Take a nap.
These doors, sir, are the problem. I don't know what they are. Neither do the British. Perhaps our friends at Murmansk have come up with something new.
So the Caterpillar Drive is essentially like a giant jet ski, right?
Yeah. It sucks in the water and gets it out, but quietly.
The doors baffle the engine, so you can't hear the engine on.
I will live in Montana. I will marry a round American woman and raise rabbits, and she will cook them for me. And I will have a pickup truck, maybe even a recreational vehicle, and drive from state to state. Do they let you do that? Oh, yes. No papers? No papers, state to state. In winter, I will live in Arizona. Actually, I think I'll need two wives. Oh, at least.
He was great. I really like Sam Neill, though. Sam Neill is tremendous.
At the end, I would have liked to see Montana.
You slammed the door on the general pretty hard, Jack. That was not my intention, sir. Oh, yes, it was. He was patronizing you, and you stomped on him. And in my opinion, he deserved it.
And we think we're super sneaky, and the Russians know everything. And they think they're super sneaky, and we know everything.
That's right.
It's like, you know, none of you guys are sneaky. You know,
the great chess
enough
pastor.
Time in the water, we figure it all out.
Okay, when do you leave? Wait a minute. The general is right. I'm not a field personnel. I'm only an analyst. You're perfect. I can't ask any of these characters to go. One, they don't believe it. Two, they never stake their reputation on hunch. Whereas you... are expendable. Something like that. Oh, that's a good one. Here you go, Mike. So you don't like flying, huh? This is nothing. You should have been with us 5-6 months ago. Whoa, talk about puke. We ran into a hailstorm over the Sea of Japan. Everyone was retching his guts out. The pilot shot his lunch all over the windshield, and I barfed on the radio. Knocked it out completely. It wasn't that lightweight stuff either. It was that chunky industrial weight puke. Here, you want a bite?
And the way some of the lines are just said, Courtney B. Vance in particular. You know, he doesn't say Crazy Ivan. Crazy Ivan.
Crazy Ivan.
You know?
He's got to go. He's got to have the Russian accent.
Oh, he's just funny. Now, he's married to Angela Bassett, right?
Is he?
Yeah, I believe so.
The power couple?
Yeah, exactly. I'm thinking she's running the show, though. I'm not messing with Angela Bassett. I like her. She's tough. What else you got?
You think he's crazy? You think he's crazy? Certifiable. And no matter what his credentials, I don't care. I don't care for him wearing the uniform. You see that ring on his finger? The Academy, Class of 72, a Marine. You're kidding. How do you... Greer told me. Summer of his third year, he and his squad went down in a chopper accident in the Med. Bad pilot. Crew killed. Kids spent 10 months in traction. Another year learned to walk. Did his fourth year from the hospital. Now it's up to you, Charlie. But you can consider cutting the kid a little slack.
A little slack.
Steer right. 315. Wait a minute. That's heading into the torpedo. Steer right till this reads 315. No, that's wrong. Ryan, don't turn that goddamn wheel. 315. 5. You're heading straight into that torpedo. Yes.
Yes. And then he tells him, you know, he cut the distance so the torpedo couldn't arm.
Right.
And then he realizes, wait, you know how long it takes for the torpedo to arm. Like the whole thing.
I'll be damned. What happened? Combat tactics, Mr. Ryan. By turning into the path of the torpedo, yeah, the captain closed the distance before it could arm itself. So that's it? Not quite. Right now, Tupolev is removing safety features on all his weapons. He won't make the same mistake twice. Such a good movie.
It is. It is. We got any more to say about this?
I love when Tupolev comes over with the Konilov to go and catch him, and they steer a torpedo at him, blow the ship up, and all of the crew of the Red October is in the rescue boats.
Right.
And they think that Ramius has scuttled the ship to keep from falling in. He's a hero. And they don't realize, like, this is perfect. They think the ship's gone. It's destroyed.
It's a great ruse, right? Yeah. It's great. And all those guys are saved.
Do you think this would hold up as, like let's say, a 6 or 8 part Netflix or Prime show? I think it would. I think there's enough story and they could really get into the nitty gritty.
If you think about the dramatic part in the middle.
Yeah.
Which really the ending is very short, right? When they're rescued or being towed into Maine, it's pretty short. So that could definitely be expanded. I mean, and the buildup could be a whole episode by itself. Getting, you know, researching this weird thing, and I think it would work. I think you're right. I think it would work.
I've only read maybe like 4 or 5 of his books, and they were all the early ones. So I think I read this, The Sum of All Fears, which I think is not a Jack Ryan book, Patriot Games, Without Remorse, and a couple others. His stories are long. There's a lot of detail, but I think it's all relevant, and you kind of need it for the kind of story he's trying to tell. Because he's not telling some yarn. I think his stuff is largely feels like it's based in realism, you know. So he's not just like making things up with these leaps of faith and the other books. No. This is all been researched, and it's really really great. Right.
The one book that I really liked was The Bear and the Dragon.
Oh, never read that.
Oh, yeah. You told me about that one. Yeah.
It's about Russia and China and them getting together. And all these things happening. And, you know, China's the bad guy now. We've migrated over since, I guess, the wall fell. So now they're not so bad anymore. I think that would be a very good movie, too.
Because there's so much detail, they lend themselves for being longer form for TV or movie. There's so much that doesn't get in to a 2-hour movie that just gets edited out. You could bring a lot of that back, and plus backstory that you have to maybe have to make it up. I agree. This was fun, guys. One of our most quotable movies, I think.
One Ping Only.
You know, our next one's going to be called One Ping Only, part of the Booze Dancing Network. I don't believe that's been licensed. I think we can just use One Ping Only. I kind of remember getting my wife a t-shirt that said One Ping Only. Anyway. This was fun. What a great classic movie.
By the way, if we get the right sort, this plan will work. But if we find some buckaroo. By the way, just one last thing. The whole scene where he's talking to his men, when he tells them that he sent a letter to the Kremlin, and everybody's just like, you did what? We could have just like, no, you had to make a political statement, didn't you? You couldn't just disappear into the night. No, not you. You got to get the whole Russian Navy after us now. You silly man. You have signed our death warrants.
Forgetting the book for a minute. The character development there is, does he want to prove that this is really a special ship? Does he want to get in this chase? Because he could have made it simpler. He could have made it a little quieter, but he chose not to. That's a whole different way the movie could have gone too.
Well, it's a good movie and great rum.
Good stuff. Thank you again to Impex. Our friends Chris Udy and Sam Filmus for sending these along. They are really good rums, really high value, I think.
Totally.
Big flavor, small price.
In the world of everything is overpriced in spirits now.
No, this is reasonable.
This is highly, highly well-priced. This was fun, boys. One show, one drink, Booze Dancing Network.
Well, gents, shall I roll the end credits?
Play us out.
Let's play us out.
All right, I'm going to roll the end credits. Gentlemen, cheers.
Pleasure.
Ready to lift off. Cheers.
If you enjoy this show, please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Audible, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. You can also find us on boozedancing.com. And if you have any questions, comments, show, or drink suggestions, email us at boozedancing@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.